Insiders at SI.com. Lodi, always a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend. How are you today?
Good, Bull. How are you?
So far, so good. And before we get into the baseball talk, I certainly want to begin with the report on your final radiation treatment. You posted the video on social media a couple days ago. You got to ring the bell. I'm sure that was a really, really cool experience for you to ring the bell.
Yeah, it was. Obviously, you know, we still have a way to go and, you know, more tests and whatnot. But, yeah, that's it's a big step forward and hopefully, you know, a positive one. And, yeah, it just feels good to get it accomplished and, you know, get a little bit of a break now and maybe enjoy baseball for a little bit.
That would be really nice if we could all enjoy some baseball. And hopefully we are just a couple of weeks away from doing that and we don't see any hiccups along the way. Now, I want to begin by examining the schedule here, starting with three against the Royals, which is very, very nice. But things really ramp up after that. Lodi, just some of your overall thoughts on the first couple of weeks of the season, which are obviously huge here in a 60-game season.
Yeah, and also the fact that, you know, again, they're not going to have a day off for 17 days. I think that's something that it's really going to try them in terms of, you know, how they're going to handle this pitching staff, how they're going to handle, you know, playing in this heat. You know, this is obviously a team that is built around two things. Number one, the starting pitching, and of course, number two, the infield. And I think that, you know, this team has historically, under Terry Francona, gotten off to, you know, sometimes very good and sometimes very slow starts. And there just cannot be that slow start this year. I mean, if this team is going to be in the hunt of winning, I don't know, 35, 38, 40 games, whatever it's going to take to try to get into the postseason, they're not going to be able to come out of the gate and go, you know, 3-7 or something like that, you know. And, you know, the schedule is set up to the point where that necessarily shouldn't happen. Now, again, Chicago is going to be much improved and they're going to come in here after the three games with Kansas City. But, you know, realistically, starting 4-2, 5-1 would be obviously a huge key to getting this team off to a good start and, you know, staying healthy. I mean, I think that's obviously something that all teams are going to be very much aware of and trying to keep their lineups, you know, going and healthy. And, you know, the more Terry Francona has to tinker with this lineup, the worse it's going to be. I think he really wants to be able to put a 1-9 out there day one and keep it that way. And I think we'll start to see some of that formulating tonight in this inter-squad scrimmage.
Matt, one of the things that Tito hit on during one of his recent Zoom conference calls was talking about how his team needs to be mentally tough out there on the field, citing how, you know, without some fans in the stands early on and potentially throughout the whole season and with some of the hot days ahead, it could be easy just to pack it in early if you find yourself down early in a game. It says his team can't be like that. Matt, do you think this team has the mental fortitude to be able to push through some of the dog days of the summer, even while playing in front of, you know, an empty stadium?
Well, that's a great question. And I don't know if it's one that anybody can answer yet because we haven't seen it. You know, what is it going to be like in the ninth inning if you're down a run and you get two guys on with nobody out and there's nobody to cheer for you? You know, is that, I mean, how is that going to be? I mean, I know that there's going to be some players in the stands, but I mean, I don't know, again, if we've ever seen anything like this. So obviously, well, I mean, we really haven't seen anything like this. So to be able to say, oh yeah, they've got the mental fortitude to do it is really just an assumption on my part to say that, because who knows if a Franmil Reyes gets up there and you know, again, like last year, you know, hits a 3-run homer against Kansas City in the ninth inning to tie up a game and the crowd's going crazy, where this time around, there's nobody there to cheer them. I mean, you know, again, everything is just a trial by error. And I think until we see it and until these guys get a little bit more used to it, I don't think there's really a way we're going to know. Same on the other side. You know, Brad Hand comes into the game in the ninth inning and needs to get two outs or three outs. And, you know, he gets the first out and then all of a sudden gives up a base hit. Is he going to be looking for something that just, again, isn't going to be there like fan support? I don't know. It's, you know, again, you would like to think that these guys are professionals and they're prepared for this, but at the same time, you know, we just don't know, and it's going to be interesting to see.
And along those same lines, Lodi, also, you wrote an article a couple days ago talking about the possibilities of fans maybe being in the seats at some point, but, boy, based on all the news that we've received the last 48 hours, it seems like the chances of that happening have drastically diminished. Is there any possible way you think that could happen at any point this season or even in the postseason?
Well, I think it's getting further and further away, Bull. And again, I think that when you look at it, at least originally, you know, it would have been great. And it really would have been something to see. But I just don't see how now is going to be able to happen because, again, you're just looking at situations where, you know, this team just doesn't, not the team necessarily, but the league just doesn't have the authority right now to allow fans to be able to come into the stands. And, you know, with all of the things going on, especially in hot spots like Florida and Texas and whatnot, I think that, you know, everybody is just erring on the side of caution. And, you know, if I had to put money on it, I definitely would say that we're not going to see fans here at all in 2020. I mean, I think you're also seeing, you know, we talked about it, or I'm sure you guys have mentioned it at least, you know, and what's going on in the NFL. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, a place like M&T Bank Stadium, which holds 70,000 fans, is going to have, you know, what, 14,000? I mean, that's just unbelievable. And I think you're going to start to see, you know, the NFL have to make some serious modifications to what they're trying to do in 2020. And I think it's already begun.
It certainly has, and I just feel like we're at that point right now where it just seems like they'd be better off just saying, you know, forget about it, no fans will be in the stands. And I just think there are a lot of people, too, that look at that with a great deal of apprehension, thinking,
Yeah. Is
it really worth the risk, too? Matt
Well,
Lody?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Matt.
Yeah, no, Matt. I was just going to agree with you. Yeah, you're definitely right. And, you know, the changes that are already taking place, too, in college football, I think, is going to eventually – you know, sort of meld its way into the NFL. I think you're starting to see that now that, you know, the Big Ten's announcing they're going to play a conference-only schedule. The Ivy League is pulled out. Just too many things are happening right now. And, you know, I've been talking to somebody yesterday kind of in the know about it, and I said, I just have no clue on, you know, with the physicality factor, how the NFL is going to pull this off. I don't see it. I don't see how football in general is going to pull this off. And I'm not talking just the NFL. I'm talking college, all the way down to the high school level.
And, of course, we're all kind of waiting on pins and needles here to see how that's all going to work. And, you know, it will be fascinating to see what kinds of developments come down over the next couple of months here as we get closer to the beginning of not only the high school but also the college and NFL football seasons as well. Taking a look at what the roster could look like, or the lineup could look like, 1-9 on opening day. And, you know, the Indians have released both lineups for the inter-squad scrimmage a little bit later on tonight. Not sure how much we should read into this, but, you know, Matt, you had mentioned this in one of your articles a week or two ago, talking about what the lineup might look like. A lot of people debating on whether Francisco Lindor should stay in the leadoff spot. Should they drop him down in the order? Well, tonight, he's batting in the three hole, playing short with Cesar Hernandez leading off. And, you know, what do you think the opening day lineup will look like?
Great question again, and one again that I think we're just going to have to kind of wait and see with these scrimmages and how they play out. You know, Hernandez is a guy who, you know, 278 last year, you know, played in every single game pretty much in Philadelphia. I think he's a guy who, you know, Terry Francona wants to be able to pencil in for 60 games and call it a day, not have to worry about the second base position. You know, this team has had to obviously deal the last couple years with Jason Kipnis and, you know, hamstring issues and issues all the way around with him. So I think they went out and they spent $6 million on Cesar Hernandez to basically say, you're the guy. Does that mean he's going to get the leadoff spot? Maybe. You know, obviously tonight's going to be an interesting look for him to see just how he does in that position. And, you know, when you're talking about Francisco Lindor, you do want to get him as many at-bats as you can. And I think, you know, putting him and Jose Ramirez in those two spots, you know, 3-2, 3-4, wherever, I think just tells you right there how much confidence that Terry has in those two guys. And, you know, as I was talking a little bit earlier, you know, again, when you're talking about the infield and the starting pitching, those are the two things that really are going to have to lead this team. If they're going to be successful, I think we realize there's deficiencies in the outfield, but I also think that, you know, the strength of this organization, the strength of this team is going to be in those five guys that come out every single night, you know, or one of those five guys that come out every single night, whether it be Clev, Bieber, Carrasco, Savali, Plesac, maybe Plutko, maybe Jeffrey Rodriguez. And on the other side, the infielders, you know, Cesar Hernandez, Carlos Santana, Jose Ramirez, Lindor. Those guys have got to produce. And if they don't, this is going to be a tough go for this team. But I think you're going to probably see somewhere in the top four, you're going to see these three guys, that being Lindor, Ramirez, and Santana. And it wouldn't surprise me, Bull, if you do see Hernandez in there, pretty much as things go along. Now, again, depending on how he gets off to a, a good start, a bad start, a fast start, whatever you want to call it. Maybe they'll drop him down a little bit. But I think at least to start, Terry wants to see what he can do, and I think they'll give him an opportunity at the top of the lineup.
It's hard not to get excited about that infield. You've got switch hitters at every spot, mm-hmm. and you've got good hitters at every spot. So I think you're 100% correct. That's going to be one of the areas that has to carry the Tribe this season. And to get into one of the other areas that you mentioned, I mean, this pitching staff is really strong, but that starting staff is something I think that we always get very excited about. And
yeah.
I think we know those first two spots for sure in Bieber and Clevinger. But outside of that, who are some of the likely candidates to fill in those final three spots if they decide to stick with a five-man rotation?
Well, Carrasco is there right now. I mean, there's no question that, you know, everything with him is going to come down to health after the leukemia from a year ago. So, you know, hopefully for him, he stays healthy. Hopefully for him, he continues to you know, get further and further away from what he went through a year ago. And you know, all indications are that he will be good to go. I mean, there's been no setbacks. There's been nothing that we've been told. You know, they haven't had to shut him down for anything health related to the leukemia or anything like that. The other two spots, I mean, that's where you're really up for grabs. You know, we talked to Adam Plutko the other day, and I asked him flat out, you know, you've been a starter, you've been a long man, what do you want to do? And of course, you know, as I expected, he said he wants to be a starter. And, you know, this is a guy who obviously, you know, doesn't have a lot of options left at this level. And the Indians do like him. I mean, you know, he came in some tough spots last year and pitched pretty well. So, you know, to me, when you look at this situation, you've got Savali, you've got Plesac, you've got Jeffrey Rodriguez, who, you know, didn't really pitch all that great last year, but then he got injured and really didn't get much of an opportunity towards the end. They had to shut him down. And you've got Plutko. You got four guys right there. I think you start the season with Plutko and Plesac, the two P's, and I think you go from there. Savali's a guy who pitched very well. He only got 10 starts, but his ERA was under 3. And again, Rodriguez just got injured and again, just had problems with command, wasn't able to find the plate a lot and just walked too many guys. But, you know, the Indians pitched him a lot. If you go back and look at February and March when they were playing spring training games in different parts of Arizona, he pitched quite a bit. So they want to see what they have in him long term. And again, he's a young guy. He was involved in the Gomes trade from a year and a half ago now, if you will. So, I mean, I think you start this season, like you mentioned, Bieber, Clevinger 1-2, Carrasco 3, and I think you get Plutko at 4, and then you got Plesac at 5. And, you know, if one of those guys falter, you know, a long man out of the pen, you've got obviously Aaron Civale, and also you got Jeffrey Rodriguez. So there's two more guys right there, and this is a good problem to have, and this is why the Indians were able to trade Trevor Bauer and Corey Kluber. And, you know, while you'd love to have those guys and you'd have an incredible starting rotation if you still had those two guys, they saved a lot of money, they got some prospects, and hopefully they'll be able to take advantage of that in the next couple years.
Yeah, and look, those guys were expendable, and that's because they've developed so much good young starting pitching in this system. I mean, right now you can look at it as if they've got a logjam up there with all the names that you just mentioned. Well, Lodi, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us. Congrats again on that final radiation treatment. Hoping for some really good news along those same lines a little bit later on this summer into August. Nothing but the best for you, my friend. We always appreciate the time. We look forward to catching up again soon.
Thanks, Bull. Take care. We'll talk again. God bless you guys.
Thank you, Lodi. You the same, my friend. That's Matt Lodi, Cleveland Baseball Insiders at SI.com. And we implore all of you to check that out.